Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christensen. You can track me down at reallifepharmacology.com, hit the contact button, and shoot me an email if you got any questions, concerns, issues, or any other reason specifically. So feel free to do that. Best way on social media is probably through LinkedIn. I'm on there usually daily at some point. So that's probably the best way through social media to connect with me. So that's Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS. So with that, let's get into the drug of the day. And we're going to talk about diltiazem. So diltiazem, the brand name for diltiazem is Cartizem. Diltiazem is a non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blocker. Mechanistically, what this medication does, it essentially blocks calcium, makes sense, it's right in the name, from entering voltage-gated channels, which prevents cell depolarization. This can cause, specifically, smooth muscles to relax. And that smooth muscle is important in the vessels, of course. But it can also impact the beating of the heart as well. So it's going to bring both of those things down. So it's going to bring down heart rate, and it's going to bring down resistance in the blood vessels. So it's going to lower pulse, and it's going to lower blood pressure. And as you can expect, this medication is probably most frequently used for things like hypertension, atrial fibrillation, can be used in angina. But because of some of the negative side effects that can occur, as well as the significant amount of drug interactions, those are two big reasons why you don't see diltiazem probably nearly as much as something like amlodipine, which is a calcium channel blocker that works strictly more so on just the vessels and not necessarily the heart quite as much. So if you want more on the dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers, definitely go back and find that podcast. I know I've done that one in the past. So anyway, very similar to the dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers. Big exception might be a little bit more drug interactions. And then diltiazem is going to have that additional effect on the heart rate. So I do want to talk about dosage forms. This is very important, especially maybe from a pharmacist perspective. And I get confused once in a while with these as well, or I forget, or I need to relook it up just to double check. So many different dosage forms with diltiazem. There's, Cartizem CD, there's XT, there's ER, Tiazac, Cardia, different brand names. So it can get very, very confusing as to, you know, which one we're utilizing and things of that nature. Now, as a consultant and what I do typically, most patients are going to be put on one prior to me assessing their medications. So they're likely going to continue on that same one, and the dose is just going to be adjusted. In the chance there's an error or we're using a different one in place of one they had been on previously, that can potentially throw a little wrinkle as far as there's different half-lives and there's different bioavailabilities. So very, very important to note that, you know, diltiazem is not diltiazem, okay? You've got to know which dosage form you have, and obviously we don't want to interchange those dosage forms, especially inadvertently, because it could potentially throw off heart rate or pulse, or excuse me, heart rate or blood pressure or things like that. So if you're not sure if, you know, the medication looks differently, maybe you're a nurse administering medications, if it looks different from what they had previously been receiving, definitely look it up, ask questions, call the pharmacy, and make sure we've got the correct dosage form there. So again, very, very confusing sometimes with this medication. Now, immediate release, that is a dosage form as well. You're typically not going to see that used very often. And the reason for that is it's got a short half-life and it needs to be dosed, I believe it's 3 or even 4 times per day to get that adequate coverage. So that's obviously problematic in a lot of patients to take a medication 4 times per day, for example. So important to remember that. The one exception where I have seen immediate release used is where we need to potentially crush the medication, or maybe it's being given through, you know, a G-tube, something like that, which I occasionally see in my practice. Let's get into adverse effects. So there's going to be a few similar adverse effects with the non-hydrodipyridine calcium channel blockers and the dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers. The one biggest one is edema or swelling. So, and this is generally a dose-dependent effect. As you go up on the dose, you're likely or you're more likely to experience swelling of the ankles and an increase in fluid. So important to remember that. I've seen so many orders in clinical practice where you see diltiazem, you know, or amlodipine started, and maybe a week later, month later, all of a sudden you see an order for furosemide or a loop diuretic for edema. That's a classic example of the prescribing cascade. Okay, so very, very important to keep tabs on that, keep on a lookout for that. Constipation is one I've seen with calcium channel blockers. Oftentimes, it's in geriatric patients who are on many, many other medications that can cause constipation as well. But just note that it could contribute or have additive effects to that. Obviously, bradycardia. So lowering of the pulse, that can be a good thing. That can be what we're trying to use this medication for. But it can drop it too far as well. So we got to monitor that pulse. And same thing with blood pressure there. Keep an eye out for dizziness, falls. That's going to be indicative potentially of too significant of a drop in blood pressure. I have seen some, you know, mild to moderate sedation making a patient feel sleepy when they start this medication. And again, typically, these are all going to be dose dependent. So if you start too aggressively with the dose, you may be more likely to see those type of adverse effects. So let's take a quick break because I definitely want to take some time and cover drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study materials, looking for materials for professional development, such as, you know, long-term care consulting, how to write medication recommendations, we've got books on drug interactions, definitely go check out all the resources at meded101.com/store. That helps keep this podcast free for all to enjoy and benefit from. So greatly appreciative to all of you who have supported the great products at meded101.com/store. Helps keep this podcast free and available to students, young healthcare professionals who maybe don't have quite as much income at their present state. So appreciative of all you who've supported the website there. All right, so let's finish up on drug interactions. I do want to remind you I've got that new book out on drug interactions, which you can find at meded101.com/store under the Amazon Books section. Go check that out, and I definitely do talk about diltiazem and, you know, some of the clinical pearls in real life that you need to know. But for this podcast, let's talk about a few. Diltiazem, very important pathway is CYP3A4. So I would say it's not a severely strong inhibitor of CYP3A4, but it can be significant. So drugs that inhibit CYP3A4 and diltiazem itself can inhibit CYP3A4. With that, a perfect example, grapefruit juice. So grapefruit juice can inhibit CYP3A4, which is a breakdown pathway of diltiazem. So that can ultimately increase concentrations of diltiazem. So if somebody started taking grapefruit juice, you could see a drop in blood pressure, a drop in pulse. You could potentially see worsening edema. Those would all be symptoms, signs of higher diltiazem concentrations. On the flip side, we've got those classic enzyme inducers that could lower the concentration of diltiazem. So if you're using diltiazem for atrial fibrillation and now all of a sudden your patient's not in control or as good as control as they were before from the using the diltiazem, maybe they started a drug like rifampin or carbamazepine. Both those drugs are examples of meds that can induce CYP3A4 and lower concentrations of diltiazem and other CYP3A4 drugs. Other meds that can play a role whenever we have a drug that inhibits CYP3A4, I should also add on, diltiazem does inhibit P-glycoprotein to an extent as well. But with CYP3A4, so many drugs go through that pathway. So some examples, aripiprazole used in, you know, depression and schizophrenia, things like that. Apixaban's new blood thinner that's being used, kind of a replacement as far as use versus warfarin. And I recently had a case like this where a patient had a nosebleed, actually, and they were taking apixaban and diltiazem. Diltiazem, it's not contraindicated that you can't use these medications together, but there is a potential that adding on diltiazem to apixaban could increase concentrations of apixaban and put a patient more at risk for bleed. Some other classic medications that might have their concentrations increased, colchicine, cyclosporine, some of the statins, so simvastatin, atorvastatin, and actually simvastatin has dosing recommendations. So the maximum dose of simvastatin that you should use with diltiazem is recommended at 10 milligrams. It's not a very high dose. Diltiazem, if using with simvastatin, is recommended to be maxed out at 240 per day. Okay, so it's important to remember some of these interactions. Sildenafil is another example that might have concentrations go up. So lots of different situations, drug interactions that can happen on account of diltiazem. And this is, I think, one of the bigger reasons why you don't see this medication used first line for anything very often there. One other thing, kind of a drug disease interaction that I did want to mention was patients with left ventricular dysfunction, so heart troubles, heart failure. Diltiazem can exacerbate that condition. Okay, so important to remember that if you've got a patient that's presenting with, you know, atrial fibrillation or whatever we're going to treat with diltiazem. Diltiazem could worsen some of the heart failure symptoms that because of its adverse effect profile. So with that, I think that's quite a few drug interactions, some important pearls on diltiazem that you definitely need to know, pay attention to. Remember those dosage forms and remember drug interactions definitely with diltiazem. Both can be tricky areas where I've definitely seen errors and mistakes made. Hopefully that helps you get some clinical pearls. Remember to go subscribe at reallifepharmacology.com. Get your free 31-page pharmacology study guide, basically. Absolutely no cost to you, just simply an email. And we'll also send out emails when we've got updates and new podcasts and things of that nature as well. If you enjoyed the podcast today, found it helpful, definitely leave us a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. I'm so appreciative to those of you who have already taken the time to do that. So signing off, track me down at reallifepharmacology.com, shoot me an email there, or certainly on LinkedIn you can find me as well. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.